Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're Baltimore Positive, positively here at Gertrude's at the BMA. It is a, it's always a great day to be here. Certainly the Amy Sherrill exhibit's been amazing. We're here to promote No Mean City, Baltimore 1966. Dan Rodericks, My Life of Friends, doing a show upstairs here. Yes, there's a theater here. But we're at Gertrude's where I had a ridiculously delicious catfish lunch with grits, cheese grits, and collard greens, and these little shrimpies on there. They were like a shrimp Creole. It was delicious. We're here on behalf of the Maryland Lottery. I have Harlem Globetrotter scratch-offs to give away. Ron Cassie's my guest. He's the senior editor. I keep wanting to call you executive editor, senior editor of Baltimore Magazine. Be more, you know, how long? How many years for Baltimore Magazine? 80?
For me?
What year did it come out? 70-something, 80-something? How many years has it been?
For the magazine itself?
Yeah.
Oh, no. We're coming up on like our 120th anniversary. This is like the longest running city regional magazine
in the country. I didn't know about it until
the 80s. In the country.
You know what would be neat? It would be to archive stuff from the 60s, 70s, 50s, 40s. I've never seen what it looked like.
I'll suggest you keep an eye out. Keep an eye out.
I did not know this.
Something in the works along the line.
Well, I'm glad I asked about that because
from time to time we'll post old covers.
Okay.
And they're just awesome. I mean, like especially when you go back to.
Was it look more like Life magazine or Time? Did it
look
more
that way? You know, there's one of my favorites is a, you know, all the cars that we import right at the Port of Baltimore. There's a great old photograph of a VW Beetles down at the Inner Harbor from like the 1960s, right? VW Beetles, just thousands of them at the Port of Baltimore.
When they were new.
When they were new, being imported.
Nobody bought one yet.
Because now you go, you know.
They're like Cabbage Patch Dolls. You know, everybody wanted one, right?
But, you know, all the cars that we import into the Port of Baltimore, right? It's a huge, we were like one of the biggest importers of cars
in the
world.
I found that out when the Key Bridge went down, yes.
Right. So, but when you go back and you see the VW Beetles, the different colors and everything, it's really fun.
The reason I ask is, yeah. I mean, I'm promoting a 66 thing.
Yeah.
And you're writing about 66 this month in Baltimore Magazine,
yeah, we just
right?
I
didn't know that Baltimore Magazine existed in 66, right?
Yeah.
Right. So the fact that you're doing sort of an archival piece on a Baltimore time capsule. Now, yours was more about the baseball team, or is it more like Dan's show, which is more about race and integration and the problems?
I haven't seen Dan's show, obviously. This story has been on our storyboard for, you know, at least a year. I mean, I've wanted to do this story for a long time. I guess it's not a surprise that, I guess, like Dan and I have been around for a long time, baseball fans, that you realize how meaningful 66 was, the acquisition of the trade for Frank Robinson. You know, shout out in Bull Durham, remember? Annie Savoy, Susan Sarandon's
there
character,
you go.
Right?
And shout out to Pete Alonso, who is the latter-day Frank Robinson.
Well, maybe, but this culture is not going to have the same impact. I'm a big
Polar
Bear fan, but culture is not going to have a big impact. But yeah, this story's been on the board for a long time. I mean, during COVID, I live tweeted the 1970 season, like game by game, baseball being canceled. So I created an anonymous Twitter account. And by the end of the season, I had like 6,000 followers. I tweeted like a sports writer.
I had a burner account.
I had a burner account. I miss baseball so much. Right? I'm at home by myself.
Why aren't you in Sarasota today?
I was live tweeting every game and anonymously. The account still exists. But partly from that, I did so much research into the Orioles, right? So 1970, not 1966. I did so much research because you're like, well, whatever happened to Kurt Pelfrey or Steve Barber?
And like, or Luis Aparicio.
Yeah, and you dig back. When did they acquire this guy? And one thing you realize is how much like injuries are a part of the game, like how many young guys come up promising, make a contribution, and then they're forgotten because they're just out of baseball in 2 or 3 years, back then especially. But, you know,
Luke Jones brought up Nolan Reimold to me last week, so that came up.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking there's a guy there, you know.
Yeah, well, Wally Bunker is the, you know, we'll talk about 66, he's the quintessential. I mean, he was, Mickey Mantle said he's one of the toughest guys Mickey Mantle ever faced. And he's like out of baseball, like he's really washed up at like 21.
Well, the Steve Dalkowski story is also, you know, legendary.
Well, that's who Bull Durham is based on.
Right.
That's right, because the guy who wrote, who did the movie, Shelton, was an Oriole farmhand.
It was a Dalkowski book that came out a couple years ago.
It was good.
Had the guy on that wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. But, 66 is, you know, I tried to meld the baseball with the cultural stuff, you know, because Frank Robinson was Baltimore Orioles' really first black superstar, right? First black player. Bob Boyd had played first base for a couple years, but, you know, he comes to Baltimore, and it's almost 20 years, 19 years after Jackie Robinson. And Frank had played here in the 50s and faced the racism and segregation.
And there
here,
were only three exhibition. Black players on the 66 team. I learned that from Vanessa and Chris earlier, yeah.
Right, and they were young. I mean, Paul Blair and the third guy's going to escape me. But, he broke ground. And listen, in 1966, Frank Robinson famously, his family had trouble buying a home in Baltimore. There was legal housing segregation. He was threatening to leave the Orioles down in spring training, come back. His wife Barbara was ready to move back to California. They couldn't find a home. The Orioles had to step in. They ended up renting a house in Ashburton. So faced tremendous segregation. He and Paul Blair couldn't get a drink or go out to eat in every restaurant in Baltimore in 1966. Right. Meanwhile, as fans are cheering on the World Series. The guy most responsible for it, Frank Robinson, can't go out and get a drink in any bar, get a dinner in any restaurant, or buy a house in any neighborhood. So it's really a seminal moment in the city's history. The Afro-American, I brought one of my
show and tell, Ron.
Show
Cassie,
and tell.
I
brought my biography of autobiography
Funny
of Sam Lacy.
Sam Lacy, sure.
From the Afro-American, Sam Lacy at the Afro-American Hall of Fame baseball sports writer, the NAACP.
Sam was in the press box all the time when I was a young person. And I didn't spend a whole lot of time. I should have spent more
Bent
time.
Bent his ear,
get some
oral history with him. But, he was pushing.
I was too dumb.
He was pushing for the Orioles to sign black ball players. The NAACP was local civil rights organizations. Baltimore was a Colts town in 66. And they had Lenny Moore, Jim Parker, would get John Mackey, Willie Richardson, a bunch of other black ball players. Buddy Young was there. And the Orioles had nobody. And baseball was, less so today it is in America, but then baseball was the
America's
sport of
game.
America's
sure.
game.
Yeah, sure.
I interviewed for my story Reverend Alvin Hathaway, who went to City College and worked at Memorial Stadium.
Love the Rev.
Right. Well, he was at the game when Frank Robinson hits a home run out of the stadium.
My parents were there, Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
Mother's Day, 68.
Was sold out, 66.
66, sorry.
Was sold out because, Frank was new. I mean, it was.
68 was the year he was hurt, I think, yeah.
It was, a huge moment for that year. But, Reverend Halfway was in high school. He dropped his box of popcorn. He was selling popcorn.
Oh.
And it just tumbled all, the whole tray
dropped.
When
I get him on, I'm going to have to talk
to him
about that.
Dropped the whole tray. Everybody turned their head. he was saying that when they got Frank, a home run hitter. And you coupled him with Paul Blair, exciting, gold glover. Now African-Americans in the city were becoming attentive to the Orioles. And the Orioles, it's documented. I mean, it's in our story. They were looking for a black ball player to sign. They were losing. At that point, Baltimore was the sixth biggest city in the country.
Well, Hofberger had also been through the Holocaust with his family and stuff. From what my understanding is that there was a real understanding about management to be – I hate the word liberal. It's so dumb what has been done to the word liberal, but I guess that would be the word time.
I think it was a business decision. The city is the sixth largest in the country. 35 to 40% are African-American, yet they don't have any black ball players. And, this is long after Jackie Robinson. And so they wanted that audience. They wanted to appeal to the customers. They were looking for to sign a superstar at the same time. So it wasn't.
And they're also looking to find great players.
Also looking to find
great players.
So you right? Yeah. I mean, we know why the National League dominated the 60s in baseball, right?
Willie Mays, Willie McCutchen. Just give me through the list.
Roberto Clemente, Manny Sanguinetti. Because on the heels of Jackie Robinson, the National League moved first. To sign black players, Orlando Cepeda, Latino ball players, black and Latino players from Cuba, Rico Cardi, Vita Pinson.
The
we
big
know
boy.
All the great players. Willie McCovey's, Ernie Banks.
Dickie Allen.
Dick Allen with Philadelphia, who went through a horrific experience there. Reggie Jackson has talked about the racism he faced, like Frank Robinson did when he was in the minor leagues, in Utah, which was very segregated. The Mormon Church had a really backwards view of black Americans, individuals, thought they were inferior. And then he went to Columbia, South Carolina, which Frank Robinson says. And one more.
Got a Frank book. Hold on. Frank My Life book. In Baseball. Look at that with that Indians gear on. Look at that in the
first 70s. Black manager in baseball.
Of course.
But he writes about how, Columbia, South Carolina was an improvement on Ogden, Utah in terms of race relations. that's how tough Utah was then. And, you know, one of the interesting things I think about Frank Robinson, I'll just share a couple of books I read for our story, but and if people are interested in baseball, both of these books, Fighting for Fairness, Sam Lacy, is it on there?
It's over here. The camera's over here.
Oh, there it is. And Frank Robinson's autobiography are both great reads, great baseball reads for a fan. But, you know, Frank becomes the first black manager, and he was every bit the kind of ball player. When he retires, he's fourth all-time in home runs. That's, you know, Brooks Boone.
660.
Brooks, 586.
586. 660 was Brooks, Willie Mays. Sorry,
Brooks,
my bad.
Boog, Jim Palmer, all say he's the best player they ever saw. Now they didn't play; they didn't see much of Aaron and Mays because they're in a different league then. But
All-Star games.
But you know, Frank was extraordinary player, extraordinary acquisition. You just can't say enough about his impact. And
so your story's in the April or May.
It'll be the April issue. Come out in usually comes out. We do a preview for this baseball season. It comes out. At the end, it'll be in newsstands like the end of March.
Okay.
End of
soon.
This month. Yeah.
And if you subscribe, as you should,
get it earlier. Yeah.
You get it a little earlier. Ron Cassie's here. He is a senior editor of Baltimore Magazine. You know, there's a million things. You and I have talked about Renaissance of the City, and we talked about travel, and you riding your bike places, and I get Max on. We talk movies in Baltimore, different things like that. The baseball side, I know you're a baseball historian, and quite frankly, this time of year, little oxygen to talk about the season, the off season. You already mentioned you love the polar bear. I haven't had you on since this happened. And I have you on maybe twice a year, and we wind up inevitably talking about baseball and winding up moving into some weird social issue or something like that, or Trump or something. I want to stay on baseball with you a little bit and get your vibe on this, because the Orioles have been through this tumultuous couple of years now, right? Ownership change, manager change, leadership change, down 500,000 customers last year, the television network, Masson being split up now, and maybe labor stoppage, right, coming up in 9 months, right? That's at the top of my list all the time. Where are you on the baseball? You're a pure baseball fan. The Pete Alonso thing, this has been good for the Orioles, I think. I think they got a good guy. He seems like a decent human. You're already a fan of his. Now, whether he's going to hit 40 home runs, I don't know, but I check off on the effort, if that matters. And I couldn't always do that. I could never do that with Angelos almost, right? They never looked like they were really trying all that hard. They look like they're trying. They bought a $19 million starter in February. That's good. That's an investment. The Angelos didn't buy $19 million pitchers in February.
Yeah. You're talking about Chris Bassett?
Yes.
Yeah. Chris Bassett used to play for the Mets too. So there, I can tie Frank Robinson to my New York Mets. Because I was born in North Jersey. My dad was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. So I was five, turning six when the Orioles and Mets met.
You were a Mets fan out of defiance for the Brooklyn Dodgers, basically.
Well, that's who.
And anti-Yankee.
Nobody could root. Nobody was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan or New York Giants fan, right? Could root for the Yankees.
Okay, so this is the same thing when I lost the Colts. We were never going to root for that team in Washington that wears burgundy and gold.
No.
It just was, you know, I got you.
58, my dad's in high school when the Dodgers go, senior year, when they go to Los Angeles. And he forswears off baseball for like the rest of his life. But then he has a kid who likes baseball. And so we all adopted the Mets.
And they lost 150 games in 62. And next thing you know,
the Mets had the Brooklyn Dodgers and Giants colors. That's where the blue and orange comes from. But this is a long way of saying that, like, I've always followed the Orioles because I go back to that 69 World Series.
How old were you then?
Well, I turned six shortly afterwards. But I was the kid who at 3 years old was watching the whole games with his dad and grandpa. I was a kid at five who was throwing baseballs.
I'm the same kid, Jerry Martinez. But I was just 4 years behind you. I was born in 68.
Yeah, so
you were born in 63?
Yeah.
All right, I'm 5 years behind you. Okay, go ahead.
So
I was more Rusty Staub.
Yeah, that 73, like that era. I mean,
Les Orange.
My cousin Dave, I would be in the street. You know, I'd play first base in the manhole cover.
You were
and
at
he
Crane
played
Bowl?
Shortstop. Yeah, I was left hand, so I got first base. Don Clendenin, and he was Buddy Harrelson, so. But I've followed the Orioles forever. But
I wanted to be Felix Mion in 73, but I'm going to choke up.
Well, Tommy.
Speaking
of early
guys,
black ball players, Tom Age and Cleon Jones were friends who played left field and center field. They grew up together in Alabama. and Mobile, Alabama. And they were like that generation. This is what I was going to mention
Mobile,
about
Mobile, Alabama, and Hank was there.
One thing about Frank Robinson, I'll get to the polar bear in one second, but I can just say this. One thing about Frank Robinson was Jackie Robinson kind of had a silently and was venerated for silently taking the abuse that he took. Frank Robinson was not a turn-the-other-cheek ball player. You know, they were, you know, emancipated by then. He slid hard with the spikes up. He got into fights on the field. He leaned over the
He ran the kangaroo court. He was a leader.
Yeah. I mean, he led the National League in hit-by-pitch 6 out of his 10 years there. I mean, he was a fierce, fierce player. A legendary competitor. I'm going to jump gears. This isn't a non sequitur, I guess, to the polar bear. Watching him play for the Mets, which I have the MLB app to watch the Mets, and I get Masson to watch the Orioles.
But you are a bigger Mets fan, though.
No, it's right down the middle.
I watch Bolton.
Who's? Yeah, you know, I'll say this: who's ever having the better year, I'll probably watch a little bit more on. But you know, I'm practically watching a game a night at one of them for sure.
Okay,
and I'm
okay.
following. I'm on everything. No, I mean,
I won't bother you between 7 and 11
in the
on
last,
summer nights.
The so last 35,
unless I have beer
last
crash.
35, 40 years, I've been to, you know, 100 Orioles games. I've been to like 3 Mets games.
Okay,
I mean,
all right.
Yeah, so, but we do watch the polar bear religiously. I've got a lot of family. My brother Chris is
that was a big day when he signed
bear.
Here then, for, right? That was
it
a big
was,
day for you,
I
right?
mean, the emotions. I mean, I couldn't handle it. You're a Mets fan. You're just wrecked. I mean, how am I supposed
so
to feel
are
about
Mets the fan. One? He is.
No, but they steal. Why did the one team that had to steal him be the Orioles? Do you know what I mean? It breaks your heart. And I'm glad I get to see him play. I'm glad the Orioles got him, but you're like.
He was going to leave anyway.
Why did the Mets sign him? I mean, this is the
owner didn't have
so here's
money.
The Frank Robinson connection. He's like the same age. Right, he's like leading the NL in homers. Frank Robinson was you know hit like 33 homers in a pitcher dominated era, 296. And Bill DeWitt, who was the owner of the Reds at the time, says he's not a young 30, not a young 30. That's the famous quote. Little fire in Frank. He won the Triple Crown in '66, but in a different jersey. So I don't know why the Orioles didn't, the Mets didn't sign the polar bear. He had a huge year last year. He had a bigger year than Juan Soto. And from beginning to end, he carried the Mets.
So you
and
love
he's a
this
joy
acquisition.
To watch. He's a joy to watch. He loves the him and Francisco Lindor are two of the most fun players to watch in sport.
I love Frankie Lindor.
They're unbelievable to watch. They're great at the interviews. They're great at their game. They're team guys. I mean, Alonso spent his career there. I don't know how the Mets say, you know, that we can't pay him, but the Orioles can afford to pay him. That makes no sense to me. But that said, I'm glad he's here. I'll see him more. I hope he hits 40 home runs. Camden Yards is not necessarily a right-handed hitter's friendly park still. It's about average now as a ballpark, but it doesn't matter for him. I mean, Citi Field wasn't a home run hitter's park either. And I think what Polar Bear will do, Pete Alonso for the Orioles, that Frank Robinson did, was you just put him in there and you just bat him forth every day, and it takes the heat off everybody else. He's the lightning rod. He's the guy they've got to pitch around. They don't want to walk the guy in front of them. They don't want to see him come up in dangerous situations. They don't want to walk Alonso if you've got somebody behind him because now you've got two or three guys on base. He's the guy in the clubhouse that – you know how it is. Reporters
– I knew I was going to get pissed off Mets fan and happy Oriole fan all in one.
I'm a jumble of emotions.
Package.
I can't sort it out. But, you know, when reporters go into the locker room and you've been there, they tend to go to, like, an Adam Jones. There's usually one veteran ball player that they go to a lot. It happens in the season, right? And I think it takes some of the heat off the other guys. And Pete Alonso is also that guy. You know, there's no pressure on Gunnar to be the spokesman for the team. Pete Alonso has more years
and he's
in.
He's being paid to be that at this point.
He's being paid to be that. He's being and that, I think, it's one of those things, like in sports, I think in a lineup, you put a guy in and the other pieces seem to fall into place. You know, nobody else, Adley doesn't have to hit home runs. Just get him on base. You know,
are they a playoff team in your mind right now? I mean, I'm scuffling with Kittredge going down earlier and Westberg and Holiday. I mean, I'm the guy that fought with Luke 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, before the injuries got the Blaze Alexander deal that we didn't understand at the moment when they gave bullpen away for that. And at that moment, their over or under, and I looked it up, was, and it depends on where you are in Vegas, was 86.5 to 89. That was the over or under. And I said to Luke, I'm like, I'll bet the over. I'll take the over in 89. I'll take 91. I'm okay with that. When they signed Bassett, when it feels like Rodgers and now you see Bradish, they look like they're at least sharp enough. This whole World Baseball Classic thing is going to be weird for all of these teams splitting off. And I thought they don't have to play the Yankees and the Reds. They say, well, the division's loaded. Yeah, but they don't play each other like they used to in a way where that would really matter and beat them down.
Yeah.
So for that, I looked at it and said, all right, they'll have a bounce back year. They have a new manager. Seems like they've signed some players. They've addressed some needs. Even the Ward thing for Rodriguez didn't make as much sense to me at the moment as it probably will. So I'm good with their offseason, but apparently I'm more optimistic than a lot of people are.
Oh.
I mean, when I talk to other people, they're like, yeah, come see. We'll see. Yeah, well, wait.
I think they'll compete for a playoff spot. I hope, you know, I think 90 wins, like you said, is probably the top end, you know.
You think wild top card. End?
About that, right? I think they got...
See, I think Henderson could hit 35 home runs, and Alonso could hit 35 home runs, and Rodgers could make 28 starts, and Bradish... Like,
oh, Bassett's great. I like Bassett is another guy that takes the ball.
And say they have enough pieces here, and young players, the Holidays, the Westbergs, the Cowsers. I don't call Rutschman young anymore, but he's a friggin' 1-1. So, I mean, you know, there is a level of productivity that I'm still waiting for that light to go on for him and for him to be healthy. But health has been daunting for them the last couple years in a lot of ways.
I think Westberg and Holiday, that's a little why I'm cautious. They're going to miss time. They're not going to come back and be themselves.
I thought there was 1,000 great prime at-bats they were going to get this year from two aspiring all-star to Hall of Very Good players that I'm not sure we're going to get 600 at-bats out of the two of them this year that are going to be of quality. And that's just me. And especially Westberg, I'm not going to get anything out of him.
And I really like Westberg as a ball player. You know, I think he's just a throwback kind of gamer. You know, you can put him anywhere in the lineup, put him anywhere in the infield. He's a guy who makes great contact. You know, he's not a strikeout guy. He's going to get a runner in from third. He's going to move a guy along. I think it's tough with the injuries. And I think I'm not a huge Colton Cowser guy. I haven't seen him hit high, you know, good enough average anymore. I think one thing, talking about Frank Robinson and Brooks and Boog and those guys also hit for average. You know, Frank hit .296 the year before he came here.
We're in a different era with strikeouts and all, I mean, literally, right?
Yeah, but listen, but you know, Frank was in a pitcher-dominated era. Those ERAs, that's when Bob Gibson was posting like a 1.19 ERA in the 60s. That was a pitching-dominated era. After 68, they lowered the mound. They were so dominant.
Well, I mean, Tiant and Sutton Sam and all that. So, yeah.
So he hits 49 home runs in 66 for the Orioles, .319. .296, he considered a down year with the Reds. And he was a home run hitter. And the only reason I bring this up is I think when guys don't hit for average, it gets tough when you get into against the better pitching in the playoffs, because you're not going to get enough hits off the top pitchers. You know, if you're only batting .240, but you're hitting a lot of home runs, well, that batting average is going to slip further when you get against the top number one or two pitcher on the staff. It's going to slip further in the playoffs when you're facing the best bullpens, and if you're not hitting for average, you're kind of not hitting. You know, it's not to get through a season and hit .235. But you hit 30 home runs, you drove in a lot of runs.
You're making a lot of outs in key situations.
You're making a lot of outs. And it's going to get worse in the playoffs and against the better teams. It's going to get harder. So guys who hit for an average, I have a lot more confidence in. So I think, you know, Cowser is not young anymore. Westberg is not young anymore. Holiday certainly is. Gunnar certainly is a superstar potential. I mean, you just stand next to Gunnar Henderson, and you can see a guy who could play free safety in the NFL. I mean, he just is that kind of physique and natural power and grace and speed.
We'll see if Kobe Mayo can play third base too.
We'll see if Kobe Mayo. There's questions, but I love Bassett. I love the pickup of a veteran starter, like you said.
Well, Ron Cassidy's here. I'm choking to death. It's Baltimore Magazine, and he is the executive. I keep wanting to say a senior editor. Doing a 1966 piece. What else is going on with the magazine? As we get into, you doing more baseball this summer or no?
We have a couple.
Gonna welcome Craig Albernaz. We doing that one yet?
Probably when the season starts, yeah, at least for our website. We have a couple little smaller baseball stories, I think, coming into print. You know, we try to pick our spots, I think, in the magazine.
Well, you'd write all baseball every month if you could. From March through October.
I told Jim Henneman, our old friend, you know, who I went to some Oriole games with, that I would love to be an Orioles beat writer for like a year, just to do that whole thing for a year, to really get the ins and outs and the ebb and flow from spring training all the way to the end. I don't know that I'd want to do it like longer than that, like stay in it longer. But I for a year, I think it would be like
I ran around with them for 25 years till they threw me out, and it's all good. You know, I've been okay. I'm in the 20th anniversary of being thrown out now after being credentialed for 23 years. How about that?
I will say that the Orioles are very gracious with us that when they have made the playoffs, they get us press passes and a photographer.
They told me
we
don't have room in the press box because of you.
For opening day.
I can only laugh about it. It's not funny. It's actually cruel and weird. But the new ownership, you bought in? That they know what they're doing. I've had a lot of conversations on and off the air about Katie Griggs, who I've interacted with now enough for her to tell me I'm not a real media member. But they lost attendance last year, the television thing, the Birdland memberships, the subscription side of subscribing to apps and who's more want to do that. You're a baseball guy. I'm a baseball guy. We're going to do it. But the people that aren't, there's not a real invitation to let them in. And there was a headline I shared this today. I actually took a screenshot of it, and I shared it in The Athletic about baseball doing everything it can do to be not as good and fan-friendly as it could be.
Yeah.
Here it is, The Athletic. MLB's been revitalized by rule changes, but according to our readers, not everything about the fan experience has gotten better. No league has actively made it more difficult to watch their games than Major League Baseball over the last 10 years. It discourages fans from tuning in. That's just a fan comment, but it's not something I'm not unfamiliar with on a Friday night when I'm in Toronto and the game's on Apple TV and I can't even watch the game.
Yeah.
So there is a point where who's running the business and then this work stoppage thing that you're familiar with, I'm familiar with, we're more familiar with than most fans because we're journalist kind of guys and study this and read Lords of the Realm and all of that, which I'm sure you have. These new guys, do they have a strategy for a work stoppage? You know, do they have a real strategy for what the little city around Camden Yards and their little battery that they're trying to siphon money in? I don't sense anything from a media perspective, fan perspective, not even on their own website where they have people giving them foot rubs who work for them, getting their messaging out about the messaging that we're not Peter Angelos. I hear that. The messaging that Cal Ripken's involved, okay, he's in the commercials. The messaging that we're going to get bobbleheads away and do giveaway, okay, great. And we get cheap beer and cheap food, blah, blah, blah. The messaging for me with the team and making people love the team and get into the soap opera and loving baseball and all the nerdity. You and Chris Reel were having nerd conversations because you were part of the nerd society that Luke's part of that they always want me to be a part of, right? The analytics groups, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's the name of it?
Saber. Society of American Baseball Research.
Janet Marie tried to get me down for a beer.
We hung out a lot during when the convention was here.
Right.
So I'm
saying from a baseball perspective, there's us.
Yeah.
In our own little nerdity, where I mention Rusty Staub and Felix Mian, and you get turned on by Hank Greenpool, and then there's somebody that's never watched baseball or went away years ago.
Yeah.
Or inclined because of race, the knee, the Ravens, the league, whatever, to say, oh, I want to be a baseball fan again and I want to come back. How much? Where's the game? How do I find it? It's on every. There's a lot of built-in things about baseball you and I accept that to get in on the soap opera, to get new, young people of color, different people, they have their work cut out for them. They're above and beyond you and me.
They do. There's a lot to unpack. You bring up a lot of stuff.
And they pissed off half of us to the point where I don't want to be involved
there's
with
a lot
them
to
or
unpack.
Promote them.
Some of it is Baltimore, some of it is baseball, some of it is Angelos. I mean, there is, you know, I came here in like 86, right? That's when I first moved to Waverly, sort of walking the game at Memorial Stadium. They were not good, you know. We had
They were not good. They had Fred Lynn, though.
We had the 89 season. Fred Lynn is a wonderful guy. 89 season. Frank Robinson, the manager of the Why Not team. It was a blast, right? But all those losing seasons, like 14 in a row, the firing of John Miller, I think maybe we've talked about some of the stuff in the past. You lost a generation of potential
fans. I've
been on
the radio for every minute of every day of this.
Yeah, but you've lost.
I had John Miller crying in my
studio.
See,
you and I would remember like the
83 years ago.
You remember the 83 World Series, the 79 World Series, but how many people do? I mean, you lost a generation or two of fans, but not even fielding a competitive team.
Luke loves baseball his whole life. He was born 2 weeks before the World Series in 83.
Yeah.
What does he have to hang his hat on other than Cal Ripken night, a couple of Jeffrey Mayer game, the Delman Young double, and the night I got thrown out of the press box in Arlington
game.
2 years ago? Like, but people talk about the Delman Young double like it's the 66 World Series, and it's way far away from that. You know, if Delman Young's all you got and the Pope showing up at Camden Yards 32
well,
years ago.
It was, of course,
and
the Delman
Cal
Young
Ripken,
thing. The Delman, like,
better make
like,
some
like
memories
the,
for people,
like
dude.
The Andino slide
the,
against
the
Reds.
The curse of the Andino. Right. I was there at that night, by the way.
And I was there for Delman Young in the bleachers behind home plate. The eruption of noise and the sound was like nothing I've ever heard. And it was partly the generations of never having anything to cheer for. Like this repressed, you know, Buck Showalter, we're back, we're here, we're going to win a playoff series. It was just an explosion of sound. But I think with the Orioles, you know, I'm somebody that's probably going to bring in a bottle of water and my own peanuts. It's expensive to go to the ballpark. It is. And I think, you know, I've seen, you know, Baltimore Banner, Sun reporters tweet out, well, you know, the attendance is down and all this stuff. Where is everybody? Well, you have all this losing trajectory where you weren't even competitive. You had COVID, no baseball. You know, it takes more than one season of hitting the playoffs to develop a fan base. You know, it's not just like, okay, where is everybody? It takes a long time, dedicated ownership. It takes being competitive, you know, kind of year in and year out, fielding a good team.
It takes a presence, like a real presence.
Takes a real presence.
And Larry Lucchino, and you and I maybe not didn't even notice that in the 80s and there was a presence there that got Camden Yards built that created that Oriole magic,
yes.
That created that why not season, that made it feel like to a Jersey guy to come down here to adopt the Orioles and be, you felt like you could be a part of it. I don't know that's even on the menu anymore for professional sports, that you're really going to be a part of it. You're going to be a gambler on it. You're going to be a customer.
I think you're right.
You're a customer. You're a number. You're not a fan.
And this is not just baseball. I've heard Charles Barkley complaining. He's on the road at a hotel. He can't find the NBA game because, you know, is it on TNT? Where is it? NBC? Is it on Peacock? Where am I finding the game? It's the same in baseball. You know, are the Orioles on Masson? They are there on Fox? Are they on ESPN?
There's
are they on Apple
TV? There's an
arrogance
that you're just going to do whatever. You're going to wait in line 3 hours for a bobblehead and 100. I don't think they treat people
it's
well.
It's a trade-off to get
sense,
the money for these
know?
Networks.
I love baseball.
As opposed to the fan. It was always a game that people went to. As opposed to just watched on TV. It was a place you went to, it was affordable. That's been lost. Obviously the TV stuff. I think the bigger thing is the biggest thing with baseball, you mentioned the work stoppage. And by the way, Curt Flood, give him a shout out, right? The guy who basically changed all of professional sports by challenging the baseball reserve clause in 1969, right? Black center fielder for St. Louis Cardinals. He was a Golden Glover.
The Colin Kaepernick of his era.
Hit 285, 31 years old, and the only team he could possibly re-sign was the Cardinals, and that launched free agency. He grew up with Frank Robinson in Oakland, by the way. So did Bill Russell. That's some game changers from the high school they went to, by the way, in sports history. Bill Russell, Frank Robinson, and Curt Flood. But I think where baseball has failed compared to football and basketball is you do need, right? You do need some type of market, some type of revenue sharing stream that can put teams on the same playing field competitively or at least close. I don't think we can just
see,
let
see. Everybody's going to take a side on this. You're taking the owner's side in this now.
I want to say with the ball players, for the ball players. I'm not saying like
the players don't want a salary cap, and that's what you're proposing. You know, like literally. That's going to be the conversation amongst fans in the offseason is, I want it to feel like the Packers and the Giants doing
yes,
football.
Yes.
And that means the players are going to lose the battle, or I don't know how that would always be a loss for them.
It doesn't seem to be that the NBA players or NFL players' salaries are taking a huge hit.
Well, you better talk to this Meyer guy that just took over for the Clark guy, because I talked to the Don Fear guys and the Marvin Millers, and it's going to be a war. The Bryce. By the way, your guy Bassett's in on this, right? He's one of the big union guys.
Yeah.
That's here, you know, as well as Bryce Harper and whatnot. So, as much as I want to talk about what's on the field, and you and I will do that all summer, this is going to be percolating. The Lakers are going to be percolating.
Yeah, it's as a you know, a monopoly, and you're a fan, it's like we want to see the best product and grow the game. And
next guests.
Oh, great.
No, I'm going to wrap up with you.
Okay, good. Not only good, I love Ann Mannix from the BMA. I've been to the Amy Sherald exhibit. But I think, as a fan, the sport has to figure that out. You just can't have the Dodgers buy the pennant in the World Series every year. I mean, it subtracts from the game overall. I don't think it hurts the pie of the player's salary pool. Why does it necessarily do that? I think it's kind of short-sighted.
I've been through three strikes here, right? Four strikes and three work stoppages while I've been on the air.
Yeah.
And when I make this point that is, I always call it Adam and Eve and the original sin in the Garden of Eden, is the Yankees and the Dodgers were never going to get online with any of the Pirates and the Royals.
Yeah.
And the players were never going to have it.
Nope.
And how the structure of the union is for the players, the battle drums this summer, and whether Gunnar Henderson's going to say, "I'm willing to walk a picket line," you know, when I'm in a arbitration year when I could be making $20 million this year, whatever the number is going to be. That's always the hardest part for the older guys to talk to younger guys into holding out.
Why does revenue sharing necessarily reduce the pool of salaries?
Well, you're going to have to ask the
I guess the idea is that the Dodgers and Yankees just drive the bidding up so high, everybody's has to go along behind them?
I think the idea is that the Pirates and the Royals, they would never have enough money to fund them in a way that they really would spend the money. And they would pocket the money the way all the owners have in baseball. The luxury tax money was a scam system set up for people like that creep down in Miami to steal all the money, right? I mean, that's really what happened. Loria, the art dealer, while I'm in an art house here, you know, like doing all that.
It's a, you know, we go back to the conversation started, like 1960s baseball. The Pirates were so exciting, you know? The San Francisco Giants.
That's what they thought in 92, too, until they stopped spending money, right?
Up until 92, they were great with Van Slyke and Bonds and Bonilla and that whole crowd. But, you know, going back, you know, to the Clemente, Willie Stargell, Sanguian, Al Oliver, unbelievable hitter, that whole era, you know, all the way through 83. You know, the San Francisco Giants had great teams with Cepeda and Mays and McCovey and the Alou brothers and oh my God.
Sure.
But we don't have it anymore.
I'm gonna let you go. Hold this Frank Robinson book up one more time. I'm gonna borrow that. My Life is Baseball, Frank Robinson. My Life is Ron Cassie in Baltimore Magazine, April during the 1960s. What's on the cover?
The cover right now is Best Restaurants. So if you want to see that on the newsstands,
I got tastiness.
And
going
if you want
right
to
now.
Go to April, the next issue, it's John Waters' 80th birthday, and Mr. Waters is on the cover. And
another benefactor of the wonderful BMA
and
here,
our
right?
Good friend Max Weiss wrote the profile to go with John Waters. The cover
story. So Max Weiss was hanging out with John Waters.
Yeah,
I'll pay for that.
Yeah,
they
were hanging out, and we got it. The photos of John are great, and of course,
I've never met John. I've had him on my show. He did the show like 3 years ago when he did the Sex Valentine thing that he was doing.
Yeah,
and I asked him to come on, and he agreed, and he came on. It was a big deal for me. I mean, I did my hair, you know, I shaved, having John Waters on, and I'll talk to Ann about this too because I know he's done a bunch of stuff here. Ann, you want to come sit in? Come on, Ron says he knows you. I'm going to let you in here, so I'll just, you know, I'm going to go old school here and do it this way.